Hey, hey, welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. We're always online, don't you know, at npr.org/Bryant Park.
There was a story that caught someone's eye, and they told two friends,
and they told two friends,
and so on.
Yes, it's time for the BPP Breck commercial. For those you remember, the stories you can't keep to yourselves, the most emailed, most gawked at, and now they're just the most.
Good morning.
Pulling double duty today, yeah, as director.
Triple duty. Actually.
Producing as well.
Yeah, well, anyway, so this is a most...
anyway, I'm awesome, but moving on.
I'm calling him quadruple duty because he has to be in the room with me.
Yeah, it's innumerable. So this is most emailed from Yahoo, and I'm actually very excited about this. The last Harry Potter book, which, if you remember, was... 1,900 pages, I believe. They're not going to try and make 1 7-hour movie. They're going to make 2 movies. So we're going to have 8 total Harry Potter films.
Wow.
Which I'm excited about. I'm a little worried because Daniel Radcliffe, who plays Harry Potter, is going to be 39 by the time the last movie.
And he's going to look exactly the same. That guy never grows old.
Yeah. So, and Hermione, I'm kind of worried about. But still. More Harry Potter for my dollar. I'm happy.
Coolio. Caitlin, Kenny.
I have some bad news for salmon lovers. This is the most emailed at the San Francisco Chronicle. And apparently some federal fishing officials are warning that the entire salmon season could be halted this year because there are so few salmon spawning. They could have to get rid of fishing in California and Oregon unless an emergency exception is granted.
Wow.
There are different ways they count the fish, but the fall run of salmon in the Sacramento River was only about 63,000, and they were expecting about 122,000. So it's a huge discrepancy, and it's just really bad news because if they cancel this fishing, people won't be able to fish for fun, and the price of salmon that's caught commercially is going to go way up.
That's what I'm talking about. That's the part that gets my attention. That is unfortunate.
So if you like the salmon, look out.
Alison? Mine is the number one most emailed at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. It's titled Chills and Thrills, and it's about the zoo there. They have a bunch of penguins there, but the penguins were born and bred at the zoo. And they haven't really seen a lot of snow. They haven't really lived in a natural habitat. So the zoologist decided, well, maybe we should put these penguins in some snow and see what happens. They were sort of concerned about what was happening. It was supposed to be an exercise, an enrichment, a chance to see if the birds share an experience that's coded into their DNA. Like, they'll see snow and they'll know what to do. So they sent out Barry, Iris, Renee, Tut, Louie, Annie, and Angel. They presented them with a snowbank. And what did they do?
They
dove right in.
Awesome.
It's become apparently a big tourist attraction. They announced they were going to do this. And so a lot of people in St. Louis, because it is the number one most emailed, very excited. The
home
penguins.
Sweet home.
Exactly.
Trisha McKinney.
Hello.
What you got?
You know, I'm your Google girl.
Uh-huh.
So I checked the Google Trends this morning, and you know, 9 out of the top 10 were related to Governor Eliot Spitzer. So, of course, I zoom in on the one that is not. And nestled in among all these Eliot Spitzer references was the name Lara Flynn Boyle.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns out she was on Law & Order last night.
Now,
since Google... since Google Trends is all about context, when you got to click on... You got to find out what the related searches are. So
yes.
Here are the related
searches. You have to
work
searches. Backwards.
Mm-hmm. Lara Flynn Boyle plastic surgery.
Oh.
Lara Flynn Boyle's face. Lara Flynn Boyle the practice. Law and Order. So I thought, oh my gosh, what happened to her face? So I went and looked at a 2-minute recap of the episode she was on last night. I don't think she looks that bad, but you know, the thing is, she doesn't look like the Lara Flynn Boyle I remember last seeing. I can't recall when that was. She had kind of puffy lips. So then I start looking, and then you go down the rabbit hole, and you know, there's like awfulplasticsurgery.com, et cetera. They've been doing stories about her, they call artificially inflated lips, ever since 2003. So I guess this has been going on, but you know, all over the internet, people were writing like on Yahoo Answers, what happened to Lara Flynn Boyle? Everybody's checking her face out. So I thought she looked pretty good, actually.
I'm just going to start Googling people I know and face just to see what happens.
All right, Dan, what do you have?
I've got a most emailed here from the Dallas Morning News entitled No Jerks Need Apply at SPM Communications. And it's a story about one of the 10 winners of this competition that the woman featured in the article refers to the contest as American Idol for Businesswomen. And it's sponsored by a New York-based nonprofit group called Count Me In for Women's Economic Independence. They have a contest called Make Mine a $1 Million Business, where these businesswomen compete for a package of money, mentoring, marketing, and technology tools to help make them become millionaires. And this one woman, whose name is Suzanne Miller, one of the things that set her apart in the competition, allowed her to be one of the 10 winners, is her philosophy as a businesswoman is that she does not hire jerks. She doesn't work for jerks. She doesn't
like
want to represent
already.
Jerks.
Great, eat it.
If you're a jerk, she doesn't want to have anything to do with you.
But so many jerks are not self-realized. You know, they don't know.
That's true. Right.
So they wouldn't know not to apply.
I think most people who are self-realized probably say, I'm going to stop being a jerk.
But you know, there are those people who say, you know, he's so good, I'll just look past him being a little difficult.
Right.
She's not doing that.
No. Part of the competition was to give a 3-minute elevator speech on how we're different and why we'll reach the mark. And she basically got her spiel down to 9 words. Life is too short to work with mean people.
I think it's too short to date them.
Yeah.
That's just a personal aside. Sorry.
That's for a different contest, Rachel.
Thanks, Rachel.
Thanks, Rachel. And Matt Martinez, our senior supervising producer.
Well, I have the number 6 most emailed on Yahoo Entertainment News right now, and it is, of course, American Idol. You know, this could be the most emailed anywhere. I could have said it's the most emailed, you know.
Because it is the most emailed everywhere.
It's the most emailed everywhere. Now, if you are TiVoing American Idol and you do not want to know who was voted off last night and you're living under a rock, please turn down the radio. David Hernandez, out of here. He's out of here. He was among the bottom 3 last night. Saisha Mercado and Christy Lee Cook were also in the bottom 3. And, you know, I thought today, because I've been going on about American Idol for weeks now.
Yes, you and I are the Idol people.
Yes, I have a deep love for American Idol for various reasons, and I thought we would bring in somebody else who also has a deep love of American Idol, and that person is WHYY's host of Fresh Air, Terry Gross. Hi, Terry.
Hi. You know, as someone on American Idol might say, or did say, I'm living my dream.
And we are living ours by having you on. Thank you, Terry.
Oh, my God. Well, I have to tell you, Terry, I mean, the reason I love American Idol so much, and I don't know if this is the same for you, I am most fascinated by whether these guys can transcend the original song. That's why I watch. That's how I vote. You know, if they can, they did Beatles this week.
Which was so difficult because you love those songs. They're in your DNA.
But at the same time, you have to sit through like meaningful versions of Let It Be and Eleanor Rigby and stuff like that.
It's true. It's absolutely true.
But, you know, my task on American Idol is if somebody could take a song I really don't like and make it sound good, I figure they're talented. And the only person who's really done that so far this year was already eliminated.
So who was
like
that?
A couple of weeks ago. Alexandra Lushington, I think is her name. She did a song I really don't like, If You Leave Me Now, the one that goes, ooh, ooh, baby, please don't go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she made it sound like, oh, this is not a bad song. And it kind of is a bad song. So I thought she's really talented. I was sorry to lose her. This week, it was just like a competition for the bottom. It really was.
Terry,
I was going to out myself on your show as an American Idol fan, and I think I'm outing myself as a former American Idol fan. It's been so
stay with it. You know you have to stay with it week to week. I vow off it every week, too, and then I'm back the next time. Terry, who did you think should be voted off? Because Matt and I have been disagreeing about this all morning.
I mean, I really don't think David Hernandez should have been voted off. I actually think he has a great, great voice.
He's a cruise ship singer.
I love the way he was out there in the audience Tuesday night as if he had like all this like sexual charisma and everybody's like touching him, you know. No one is mingling in the audience. But I thought there were several particularly bad performances last night. For me, it's like a competition between the country version of 8 Days a Week.
Oh, please.
Amanda doing You Can't Do That. She's like the rocker. And what she really looks like is that she's auditioning for Rockstar Supernova or Rockstar In Excess.
Yeah.
And let's see. Oh, the tearful version of Let It Be.
Brooke White. Brooke White. Actually, yeah. I have a little bit of that here. Myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me. She looks exactly the way she sounds, by the way.
Let it be. Like somebody scraped a little piece of Carly Simon and put it in a Petri dish.
That's right. That's right.
And put it under a big light.
And it became Brooke White. She is standing right
She has Janis Joplin pants, don't you think?
Oh, she does. She does. But, you know, that's the thing. You do have the Janis Joplin singer in there, you know, the woman who basically sings.
Oh, no, that's what I'm thinking of. No, no, you're doing Let It Be, and I'm already thinking about Amanda.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Amanda Obermeyer, that's right. And she did You Can't Do That. And, yeah. Oh.
I think we're hurting Terry.
Yeah, we're hurting Terry. But it's so wonderful to have outed Terry Gross as ultimate American Idol fan right here on the Bryant Park Project.
Now, Terry, before we let you go, who are you pulling for?
You know, that's the problem. I have no one to pull for this year. I would have been pulling for Alexandria Washington. Mm. I hope I have her name right, but I have no one to root for this year. It's just sad for
me. I like
me.
Aussie boy.
Yes, you know, I am rooting for him, too. And maybe we can go out on that, on the Michael Johns Across the Universe. It was really, really, really nice. And
Wait, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I never understood this with the Beatles, and I particularly didn't understand it last night when he sang it and enunciated so well. And is it Jagaroo Davaron? Like, what? What is that phrase?
That is a great question.
That precedes Nothing's Gonna Change My World. What is that phrase?
I don't know. Let's see if we can figure it out. They slither while they pass, they slip away across the universe. Pools of sorrow, waves of joy, are drifting through my. We're getting to it, but before then, this was a beautiful version. I thought he did the best.
Yeah, I didn't like them giving him trouble for being earnest. Jagaroo
Davaron. It is Jagaroo Davaron.
It is Jagaroo Deva Om.
Okay. Does that mean something?
It sounds like a mantra.
Sounds yoga-y.
Well, maybe this is part of the mantra. Maharishi phase.
Yeah, the Maharishi phase of the Beatles. That's right.
It's Sanskrit. I can look it up if you want.
Oh, wait. I'm still going. I'm in a Google hole on this one.
The show has officially fallen into a rabbit hole.
Okay, I can't say that this source is all that reliable, but I have a source that says it means I give thanks to Guru Dev. Om.
Oh,
there we
thank
go.
You for straightening that out for me.
Now Terry Gross can go on with her day.
Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it was really fun. Thanks for inviting me. And Ian Shillog, we miss you.
Oh.
Aww. Miss you too.
and we love him. It's going to change my world. Nothing's
going to change my.
And that's the most, folks. These stories and more on our website, npr.org/Bryant Park. So we got one more for you, though. This is the most emailed story at NPR. It's a report by business correspondent Adam Davidson on how prosecutors became aware of Elliot Spitzer's involvement in a prostitution ring. They noticed suspicious movements of his money, and Adam found out that it doesn't take spending lots of money to attract some attention.
I thought the rules were simple. Any bank transaction over $10,000 is reported to the government. Anything less than 10 grand is ignored. Turns out I was wrong. Banks monitor even the most mundane transactions.
Well, should we go to Speedy's?
Right here on the corner.
Right here on the corner, yeah. That's our local deli.
Karine Yukla is my guide. She's with Actimize, a company that makes the software many banks use to identify suspicious transactions. She says banks monitor every transaction, every one, no matter how small. I decided to use my ATM debit card to buy a Diet Coke and a fruit salad.
Actually, I wouldn't recommend a fruit salad.
Really?
Really.
The fruit salad isn't that fresh, so I bought the Diet Coke and a chocolate croissant.
That's it?
That's it. So this is as routine a transaction as it gets. What's happening right now?
So your transaction is going through the various systems at the bank, and it will get loaded into our transaction monitoring system. And we will actually add this transaction together with several other types of transactions that you've done recently.
The software is checking to see if maybe that $4 is part of a pattern. If I'm making lots of small transactions at different delis around town,
then we will see that it was an excessive activity, even if it's across many transactions. But that would be a lot of croissants.
This is exactly the kind of thing money launderers do. They break big transactions into lots of smaller, innocent-looking ones. Yukla invited me up to her office to see the reports the software produces. The report goes to a bank's compliance officer, listing all recent suspicious transactions. Every transaction is given a numerical score.
The score comes between 0 and 100, and it determines how risky is that suspicious activity that was detected.
The computer scores risk based on who is making the transaction. Where does he come from? Who is he associated with? What else is he up to? Every bank customer has, somewhere in some computer database, a risk assessment score. Yukla's boss at Actimize, Ido Ophir, explains.
Immediately upon opening an account, the bank would look at all your characteristics, starting from your credit score to where you live to how much money you make.
The bank uses all this data to create your personal risk profile. It also checks a bunch of lists. Are you on a terror watch list, a list of criminals?
Most banks today will also look up the PEP list, the politically exposed people list.
PEP list.
PEP list, yes.
A PEP, banks really do use that term, is anybody with political power. That means a Nigerian general, a U.S. senator, or, say, the governor of New York. And any PEP, any politically exposed person, is monitored more carefully. If Governor Spitzer wasn't a PEP, if he was a regular schmo, his large cash withdrawals would have had a lower risk score. They might have been ignored. He also would have been safe just a few years ago.
It is improbable that anyone would have detected something like that 10 years ago.
9/11 and the Patriot Act forced banks to more carefully monitor suspicious activity. But something else happened in 2001 that made banks invest in monitoring software.
The New York Attorney General Office started going after Wall Street firms and requiring them to put more surveillance on their trading behaviors.
And who was the New York Attorney General?
I think that...
I'm not sure why Ophir didn't want to say, but of course, the New York Attorney General in 2001 was Elliot Spitzer. I might not have known about how this bank surveillance works, but if anybody should have, it's him.
That was NPR's Adam Davidson reporting.